Why are violence and the sacred so intertwined? Why is death seen as necessary to renew life? To us, the Aztec universe may appear irrational, terrifying, murderous in its brutality, and yet it is a mirror held up to our own humanity, which we ignore at our cost. For in the name of other ideals and other gods, Western culture has been no less addicted to killing, even in our own century. Michael Wood. My name is Becca Reiswig, and you're listening to So That's What Happened, a podcast where I share some of my favorite stories. History is full of engaging and fascinating topics, whether we go back to the dawn of time or only a few years ago. So settle in as we explore one of my favorites. Today we are stepping into Mesoamerica, specifically the dying breaths of the Aztec Empire. More specifically, we are here to look at the life, reign, and death of Montezuma II, or the Younger. I would like to start by apologizing for any mispronunciations that will happen. My tongue tends to trip over more words than I like to think about. The Aztec Empire is one of the great civilizations of the ancient world. Unfortunately, it is also one that is often shrouded in myth and legend. Stories of brutal human sacrifice and bloody rituals tend to be what most of the outside world recall first when remembering the empire, and much of its history was lost to the ever-marching conquest of time. However, many fascinating stories remain. I have chosen Montezuma's story to be the one we discuss today. His is a name that many people will recognize, be it for the largely fanciful legends of a vast treasure tied to his name, or the less enticing use of Montezuma's revenge as a colloquial term for traveler's diarrhea, or even the mention of the halls of Montezuma in the U.S. Marine song. While you may recognize the name, there's a good chance you don't know much about the man who bore it. As always, what we will be doing today will only be a brief look into a life and some of the surrounding history and culture. Please, if this topic interests you, look into it elsewhere. There are many wonderful books about the Aztecs and the Spanish conquest, as well as documentaries and other podcasts. History is brutal and can be uncomfortable, but I believe we owe it to our ancestors and humanity as a whole to remember it. Before we dive into Montezuma, let's look into the Aztec Empire itself. To truly discuss the Aztecs with the depth that the people deserve is not something we have time for on my little podcast, so we'll just be doing a short overview to give you a broad idea of what the Aztec Empire was. We won't be digging into the mythology and beliefs of the Aztec people here beyond what will come up later directly related to Montezuma, so we'll be skipping the human sacrifice that the Aztecs are most remembered for. This means we are bypassing an incredibly important part of understanding their culture. Unfortunately, we simply do not have the time to give the topic its due diligence. All that to say, if you're interested in learning more about the Aztec people, take the time to learn not only their history, but also their mythology, for the two are very closely tied. Some scholars believe that the Aztec people, or Mexica, as they referred to themselves, traveled south to settle the region of Mexico and the southern U.S. that is commonly associated with them in the 13th century. Others trace them back 100 or so years earlier. Regardless, by 1428 CE, the various city-states had formed into an allied empire, with a capital in form of the great city of Tenochtitlan. The empire continued to spread and enjoyed a period of, if not peace, then at least prosperity for 100 years. Military strength, as well as political maneuvering, kept the empire together, while culture and art helped create a common identity. These themes are ones that we can see the world over, even into more modern times, in varying forms. The Aztec people were deeply religious, their mythology feeding into everything from how they related their history into their architecture and even tying their rulers to divine acts. Again, these are common themes, whether we are looking at Egypt or England. The art they created lives on in many cases, hidden within the jungles, waiting to be found, or even on display in the very foundations of Mexico City. Indeed, even echoes of their culture can still be found in the few remaining Aztec people or shifted and merged into something new by the modern people of Mexico. Swaths of the vast jungle were carved out to provide room for truly impressive cities, none of which was grander than Tenochtitlan itself. The Spanish friar Diego Duran described the city and her people as masters of all the world, their empire so wide and abundant that they had conquered all the nations and that all were their vassals. The guests, seeing such wealth and opulence and such authority and power, were filled with terror. But not all were quelled by these displays of strength. As with all empires, the Aztecs had their fair share of rebellions. And then came the Spanish conquistadors. The Spanish conquest of the Americas began with Christopher Columbus in 1492 when he made landfall in the Caribbean, believing it to be Asia. This was a time of Spanish expansion not only in the New World, but also in Europe and Africa, all in the name of the spread of the Catholic Church and money. Power, wealth, and religion are typically the driving forces behind most large-scale efforts, be they conquest or exploration. The men who led the expeditions across the Americas, subduing the native populace and accumulating wealth for themselves and Spain, were called conquistadors. If I asked you to describe a conquistador, you would probably imagine someone in shining armor, a soldier. And to some degree, you would be right. However, these men were not soldiers of the crown, but soldiers of fortune. These invaders would plunder the land, stripping it of resources and establishing settlements in their wake. Pope Alexander VI sanctioned the Spanish and Portuguese conquests of the New World, provided they spread Christianity where they went. So another figure that was just as prevalent in these new lands as the conquistadors were monks or priests seeking to spread their faith, sometimes through word and deed, others by sword point. In some instances, we have the monks to thank for written accounts of the people and cultures they encountered, and in others, we have them to blame for the destruction of anything other. Now, when discussing the Aztecs and the Spanish conquistadors, one man from the Spanish side of things that we simply cannot leave out is Hernán, or Hernando, Cortés. Cortés was born in 1485 to a lesser noble family. This likely would have limited his options within Spain, and the decision to engage in a life of adventure and exploration would have been a common one for men in similar social situations. Becoming a conquistador would have offered a path to wealth and power, as well as a degree of notoriety. He spent some time in Cuba before embarking on an expedition to the mainland. This was one of the earlier of Spain's excursions into the mainland, the third exploratory force, in fact. Cortés was put in place as captain by Velázquez. They departed Cuba on February 10, 1519, only to be immediately recalled by Velázquez, the governor of Cuba. Cortés refused to retreat, and when men were dispatched to arrest him for essentially mutiny, Cortés fought and beat their leadership and added the rest of the soldiers to his numbers. From here, Cortés followed Spain's already established playbook from conquering the Caribbean. He sought out local allies and set his attention on those who would resist Spain's rule. Before we get into the conquest of the Aztecs, let's go back to Montezuma. As is often the case with names from antiquity, and even more so with names outside the English language, the often used and remembered one is not correct. In this case, rather than Montezuma, his name was likely closer to Moctezuma, meaning something along the lines of frowning with kingly anger. However, seeing as my pronunciation is lacking, I will be sticking with Montezuma from here out. I apologize for my poor tongue. Montezuma's father and uncles were great leaders of the Aztec, and under his uncle Ahuitzil's reign, Montezuma proved to be an accomplished warrior and leader himself. The Spanish monk, Bernal Díaz del Castillo, described his impression of Montezuma in 1519 as being about 40 years old, of good height and well-proportioned, slender and spare of flesh, not very swarthy, but of the natural color and shade of an Indian. He did not wear his hair long, but so as just to cover his ears. His scanty black beard was well-shaped and thin. His face was somewhat long but cheerful, and he had good eyes and showed in his appearance and manner both tenderness and, when necessary, gravity. Certainly an interesting description for the leader of the notorious Aztec Empire. Montezuma became the religious and political head of the Aztecs in either 1502 or 1503, after his uncle's death and being chosen by a council as the new head of the empire. This position was called the Tlatoani, or speaker, rather than king. The main differences being that it was an elected, not inherited position, and that the speaker often spoke to and for the gods. The coronation was a long process that involved a ritual to allow the new speaker to go before the Aztec gods and speak on behalf of his people. The previous speaker, Montezuma's uncle, was a great expansionist. He waged many invasions and conquests during his time, spreading the reach of the Aztec Empire farther than ever and leaving his nephew a throne at the height of its power and influence. Montezuma, who had served as a warrior of distinction under his uncle, continued these crusades, though not to the same degree. But these pushes and gains brought with them great disadvantages as well. Many of the people who found themselves under Aztec rule were embittered against Montezuma and all he represented. Rebellions and uprisings were at an all-time high. It's impossible to say whether this is a true reflection of Montezuma's leadership or if he inherited the people's ire from his uncle and the Aztec Empire in general. The fall of the Aztecs is simultaneously one of the most well-documented and mysterious conquests in history. The Spanish, their native allies, and even the defeated Aztec themselves all recorded what happened. However, they all seem to have differing accounts. The Spanish paint themselves as heroes, while allies place blame on enemies and even other allies they didn't like. It makes for a confusing tale and one that historians cannot seem to agree on. As we move into the Spanish conquest and the fall of the Aztecs, I will be relating the story as it is mostly accepted to have happened, with a few caveats where new theories are particularly promising. Here we've caught back up to Cortes. The Spanish conquistadors were on Mexico's shores. Montezuma had a decision to make. What to do about these pale invaders? He had just suffered several defeats to rebels, but surely the vast Aztec Empire could stand against a few hundred Spaniards. Rather than engage the newcomers, Montezuma sent an envoy with gifts, perhaps hoping the bribe of gold and other riches would satisfy the strangers and they would be on their way. The Spanish, however, were not sated. The gift instead reinvigorated the conquistadors and brought a greed to have more of such treasures for themselves. Cortes led his men deeper inland, either allying with subjugated peoples who wished to be free of the Aztecs, or killing those who were loyal as they went. This is where an old version of accounts gets called into question, and we delve a bit into Aztec mythology. There was a legend of a god, Quetzalcoatl, a feathered and light-skinned snake being, who would one day return to rule over the Aztec in person. This would mark the beginning of a new age. I'm sure you can see where the story is heading. A legend of a fair-skinned god with white feathers that could be construed as a beard, and a pale Spaniard with a white beard, arriving on ships that would have resembled a floating city. The accepted story for a long time was that Montezuma welcomed Cortes into Tenochtitlan as a god personified. When Cortes saw the numbers and strength of the Aztec, he took Montezuma captive, believing the people would not attack so long as he held their leader. The idea that the Aztec would have mistaken the invaders for gods is one that is controversial at best. This version has been debated for years, with many pointing to the story as being the one the Spanish spread. In many cases, the conquistadors were spoken of as legends in their own time, with extensive propaganda to show that they were in the right. This portrayal of Montezuma as easily manipulated or overly superstitious could have also been for the benefit of the local allies of the Spanish, as a way to disparage their enemy as well. Another version that has recently come to light is that Montezuma was never taken captive, that he instead intended to keep the pale newcomers as part of his menagerie. He was known to collect animals as well as human oddities and beauties, so it does fit. While this version marking Montezuma as a wise and crafty leader and Cortes as a bumbling fool is an interesting one, I could only find one true proponent of it in the form of Matthew Rostal, who proposes it and several other theories about Cortes' conquest of Mexico in his book, When Montezuma Met Cortes, the true story of the meeting that changed history. I imagine the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. Whether Cortes walked into a trap, or Montezuma welcomed a metaphorical snake into his home rather than a deified one, Montezuma did die in 1520. According to Spanish accounts, he was killed by his people. Cortes implored him to speak to the Aztec armies, that they might lay down their weapons and cease fighting the Spanish. The monk Bernal Diaz del Castillo describes the reaction as, "Suddenly, such a shower of stones and darts were discharged that our men, who were shielding him, having neglected for a moment their duty, because they saw how the attack ceased when he spoke to them, he was hit by 3 stones, one on the head, another one on the arm, and another on the leg. And although they begged him to have the wounds dressed and to take food and spoke kind words to him about it, he would not. Indeed, when we least expected it, they came to say that he was dead." On the other hand, the Spanish did have access to Montezuma, and it is possible that upon discovering that his hold on his people was not as strong as they thought, Cortes had him killed. Montezuma was the last of the true rulers of the Aztec Empire. By 1521, the Spanish had all but wiped out the remainders of the once great people, by sword, native ally, or foreign illness. So, that's what happened. Montezuma met Cortes and came out far worse for it. Whether the reports of them being unlikely friends are true or not, the Spanish invasion heralded the end of the Aztec, as it would some years later for the Maya as well. If you enjoyed today's topic, I recommend checking out Bernal Diaz de Castillo's Historia, which recounts much of Cortes' exploits and the Spanish conquest of Mesoamerica. Matthew Rostal's When Montezuma Met Cortes, The True Story of the Meeting That Changed History, is an engaging read for a different perspective. I also found worldhistory.org's articles on the Aztec, Montezuma, Cortes, and the Spanish conquest of the Aztec to be very helpful as well. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating and reviewing it, as well as subscribing and sharing. If you'd like to help me directly, you can head over to patreon.com/sothatswhathappened, or click the link in the show notes. If you have any topics you'd like to hear me cover, or questions or comments about this or past stories, send an email to sothatswhathappenedpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find me over on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook as STWHpodcast. "I confide to your care, my beloved children, the most precious jewels I can leave you. The great monarch beyond the ocean will interest himself to see that they come into their inheritance, if you present before him their just claims. I know your master will do this, if for no other reason than for kindness I have shown the Spaniards, though it has occasioned my ruin. For all my misfortunes, Malinche, I bear you ill will." Montezuma's reported last words.